Welcome to SCOTUscast, Tax Credit for Foreign Taxes Paid Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On February 20, 2013, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in PPL Corporation and Subsidiaries, the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. The case considers whether, in determining the credibility of a foreign tax, meaning the extent to which a U.S. company paying the foreign tax can claim a corresponding credit against its U.S. taxes, courts can and should take account of the practical operation and intended effect of the foreign tax. To discuss the case, we have Christina Sandifer, who is a staff attorney at the Goldwater Institute Schaff Norton Center for Constitutional Litigation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Sandifer.
I'm Christina Sandifer, and I'm a staff attorney here at the Goldwater Institute. The Goldwater Institute is a nonprofit organization that's goals are to advance individual liberty and defend the Constitution through public policy and litigation. The Institute joined the United States Chamber of Commerce and the Cato Institute in an amicus brief in support of petitioner PPL Corporation in this case. Now, a little bit of background on the case. In the 1980s, British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher implemented a wide-scale policy of privatization. And during that time, state-owned companies and nationalized industries were sold off to private investors based on what we call a float value. And that's basically the value that the public would pay for shares once the company's stock was floated on a public stock exchange. Now, one of the companies sold was Southwestern Electricity, which was purchased and became a subsidiary of an American corporation called PPL Corporation. This happened in 1996. After these sales, some of the now privatized former state-owned companies, including Southwestern, earned profits that exceeded the UK's expectations. So in the 1990s, when the Labour Party came into power, it resolved to tax away these so-called excess profits. Now, the formula for calculating the tax is pretty complicated, so it's sufficient to say that the United Kingdom levied a tax on what the government felt were windfalls caused by the undervaluation of these formerly state-owned companies when they were sold. In 1997, the UK billed Southwestern, PPL's subsidiary, $140 million for what they considered excess profits, and the company paid that tax in installments. Now, PPL, the parent company, turned around and claimed those payments as credits on its own income taxes in the United States. The IRS asserted that PPL was not entitled to claim that credit on its United States income taxes, and the Third Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with the IRS. The issue before the United States Supreme Court is simply whether an American taxpayer who has paid the United Kingdom's excess profits tax may credit that tax against its United States tax liability to avoid being subject to double taxation. A little bit of background on how this works with United States income taxes. Sections 901 and 902 of the Internal Revenue Code allow American corporations to claim tax credits equal to their share of foreign taxes paid by their subsidiaries. So essentially, what the IRS is doing here is protecting the American corporation from being subject to double taxation. Now, unlike in many other countries, the United States requires American taxpayers to pay taxes on income earned outside of the United States. And of course, this can be quite burdensome for Americans who are living abroad and who must pay taxes both in the country which they generated income and to the United States. In essence, they're taxed twice. So the Internal Revenue Code allows taxpayers to claim a credit for foreign income taxes paid. The same is true of U.S. corporations whose foreign subsidiaries pay the foreign income taxes. The Internal Revenue Code designates a tax as creditable against its domestic taxes if the foreign tax paid is, quote, income, war profits, or excess profits tax. Now, courts have consistently held that the substance of the tax, not the form of the tax, should guide the interpretation of whether this particular foreign tax is creditable. And the reason that they do this is because it's difficult, if not impossible, to harmonize all of the foreign taxes with the United States Internal Revenue Code. So under a substance-based approach, The courts would consider whether the nature of the foreign tax that was paid likens it to an income tax, a war profits tax, or an excess profits tax. Now, under a form-based approach, by contrast, courts would look only to the specific terminology in the foreign tax law, and they would not consider how that tax operates in practice. And those are the two basic approaches that courts would take. Now, according to Treasury regulations that interpret this code, a foreign tax is an income, war profits, or excess profits tax if the predominant character of that tax is that of an income tax in the U.S. sense. The foreign tax has to be likely to reach net gain in the normal circumstances in which it applies. And the Treasury regulations also set forth a three-part test that you can use to determine whether a foreign tax is creditable under Section 901 of the Internal Revenue Code. The test is this. First, the tax has to be imposed on realized income, and that's income that has already been earned. Second, the tax has to be imposed on the basis of gross receipts. And finally, the tax has to be based on net income, which is calculated gross receipts minus expenses. Now, in the PPL case, how the UK excess profits tax is categorized will affect whether or not it's credible against U.S. tax liabilities. If it's determined that the tax is assessed on profits earned by the privatized companies, then it's an income tax and is therefore creditable against United States income taxes. But if the tax is simply a means to capture the unanticipated value of the companies above their actual sales price, then it's only going to be a tax on value, not a tax on income, and therefore not creditable against U.S. income taxes. A little bit about the decisions below. The Supreme Court took this case to resolve a circuit split. Now, in this case, the Third Circuit overturned a 2010 U.S. tax court ruling, and it held that PPL, an American taxpayer, could not credit the U.K. excess profits tax paid by its subsidiary, Southwestern. The Third Circuit, in doing so, determined that the UK excess profits tax did not meet any of the three tests set forth by the Treasury regulations that I just discussed. And this is because the Third Circuit said that the tax was not based on realized income, gross receipts, or net income, but instead the tax was based on the undervaluation of the company at the time it was sold. So the Third Circuit, in essence, took a formalistic approach and did not agree with PPL that the tax, in fact, had been assessed on Southwestern's profits or net income. But in a similar case decided last year, and that's Entergy Corporation versus Commissioner, the Fifth Circuit held that an American taxpayer could credit the UK excess profits tax against his U.S. income taxes so as to avoid being taxed twice. Now, in arriving at that conclusion, the Fifth Circuit applied the previously discussed substantive approach. So if the Supreme Court sides with the Third Circuit and overturns the Fifth Circuit ruling, then Entergy Corporation will be on the line for $150 million in taxes. Let's talk a little bit about the arguments before the Supreme Court. Petitioner PPL Corporation is arguing that the Third Circuit was wrong to take what it considers the formalistic approach that led it to determine that the excess profits tax is not creditable. PPL argues that a long line of cases that date back to 1932, a U.S. Supreme Court case of the name Biddle versus Commissioner, and continuing all the way into the 1980s, supports the substance over form approach. Now, taking that approach, the excess profits tax, notwithstanding its technical language, is in substance a tax assessed on profits earned by these privatized companies over a specific period of time, and therefore PPL argues it is in fact an income tax. But the IRS argues that wrangling over the form versus substance approach is really irrelevant, because under either analysis, the form or the substance approach, the IRS argues that the tax is not an income tax at all, but rather it's a tax based on the value of the privatized companies whose sale prices were undervalued. Now, the IRS claims that income is only one variable in the determination of the company's overall value, and so therefore, it's really not proper to characterize this tax as an income tax. PPL, though, responds that this is a distinction really without a difference, since the valuation formula relied upon is almost exclusively relying on the company's income. And so, therefore, it's really disingenuous to say that this is not an income tax. Essentially, the question facing the court then is whether by incorporating income into its formula for determining the value, or even calling the tax an excess profits tax, as the UK does, the UK was taxing the company's income, or whether adding the other factors to the formula made that tax into something else. The IRS contends that a ruling against it would transform any foreign tax that takes income into consideration into an income tax, while the company PPL argues that a ruling for the government would disallow credits whenever the foreign government added some other factor, such as, say, depreciation, to its assessment of a company's income. Now let's talk about oral argument. This case was argued before the Supreme Court on February 20th. It was argued by the Assistant Solicitor General, Anne O'Connell, for the IRS, and Paul Clement for PPL. At the oral argument, the justices and attorneys for both sides repeatedly became tangled in the complex algebraic formula that was used by the British government to calculate the tax, and there was a lot of back and forth about that. But sorting through all of that, the IRS's attorney appeared to alter the government's argument somewhat during oral argument. She characterized the UK tax not as a tax on the valuation of the company, but as an effort to determine the price at which the former UK entities should have been sold, and then subtracting what the UK got for them when they were sold. So if you think about it, this would imply that the excess profits tax is not actually a tax at all, whether on income or otherwise, despite the fact that the parties had stipulated in their briefs that the excess profits tax is in fact a tax. A little bit of an interesting turn there. Now, it's not clear from the argument what the court will ultimately decide, but it does seem that the justices did not regard the substance versus form distinction that was relied upon by PPL and its amici as particularly essential to the outcome of the case. What are the implications of this case? Well, this case principally involves a foreign tax credit, and so it may not seem like it's directly relevant to many American taxpayers. But major news outlets are reporting that the outcome of the case potentially involves tens of billions of dollars because it could set the standard for essentially what can be considered a creditable tax. And this, of course, depends on how broad the court's ruling is. Now, if the court determines that the excess profits tax is not even a tax, which personally I don't think is likely, then that would mean that it is not creditable against the company's taxes in the United States, but that the excess profits tax is in fact not even deductible against the United States income tax liabilities. We'll find out later this year. We expect a decision probably in June. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.